I'm Tracy Morgan, and of course, we're going to continue with our interviews with great professionals around the area. And a great partnership in what we've been going through right now has been the Butler Health System. And so I can't thank them enough and the many different doctors that we've been able to talk with. With me right now is Dr. David Rodinghouse. And we've talked to you before, Doctor. Thank you for joining me. Of course, emergency medicine there with the Butler Health System, also chief medical officer, too. But how are you doing, Dr. Rodinghouse? How are you and your staff doing?
Well, I'm happy to say that we're doing well. We're, you know, constantly learning about things that we can improve, refine. We're learning more and more about how to take care of people that are infected and become ill, you know, with this virus, with the novel coronavirus. So I think, as with any healthcare providers, you know, we've had some anxieties and some difficulties and challenges and figuring out some of our processes, but I think we started early. I think we had a very, you know, committed team, and at this point in time, I think we're starting to get into a rhythm. Not that we want to incorporate this into the new norm, but I think most of us around here feel prepared. And we feel pretty good about where we stand right now.
A lot of people I've talked to outside of the medical field, it's been about routine, trying to find a routine within the day. And I'm glad to hear that you're trying to find a normalcy, if you want to even use that word, in your daily lives as you're going through this, because you guys are the front line. I've talked to the other first responders, sheriff's office and ambulance services and firefighters, because they're also there along with you. But you're the ones taking care of the patients. Have you had to, how has that been for you and the nurses? Because you are right there.
We are. And, you know, one of the things about being in the hospital is, you know, you're the end point of care. In other words, you're supposed to be applying the definitive care. But, you know, we work very well with our pre-hospital providers, and that's everybody, whether it's, you know, EMS out in the nursing homes, you know, our police and safety staff. So across the board, you know, we all have to really collaborate and work well together. And any information, communication, we have to, you know, be very clear in how we disseminate that information and how, again, we can keep those relationships and those communication lines open. In terms of, you know, in the hospital, part of, you know, what we've done is just, again, try to keep that constant communication. When you create a process, when you create a unit where, you know, or a section of the hospital where patients with COVID or suspected COVID are going to go, you want to make sure that everybody on that unit is in the habits of, you know, donning their personal protective equipment, taking care of themselves. One of the things you'll hear frequently is that healthcare providers need to be careful, because if they become ill and they can't work, then that really impacts our workforce and, you know, has a big effect on our ability to continue to staff our hospitals and other care centers. So the repeated communication, I think our staff here has done a really, really good job at face-to-face communication, of very frequent meetings, of talking through processes, and then also, you know, self-solving on units. So when we've had, you know, units or parts of the hospital that we've said this is where we're going to put our first, you know, COVID-positive patients or our suspected patients, they have really taken it upon themselves to evaluate the processes that were put in place to constantly refine them and to make them better. So it's been a challenge, but I think we're really moving quickly in how we learn, you know, how to take care of and protect ourselves as healthcare workers, and then how to, you know, really best serve the patients that we receive into the facility.
I want to ask you about what we're hearing out there in the news, and I say that meaning national news, because of course we are the local news source, and so, you know, we try to make sure that we're focused on Butler County and what's happening here. But you start to hear, are we leveling off? Are we not leveling off? Have we hit a peak? Do we go on the other side? And yet, when we hear the numbers from the Butler Health System, we're not seeing the hundreds of people in a hospital. You know, we're not seeing the thousands of people in a hospital. So what would you say about that thought process? Are we leveled off here in the county, or do we not go to that step yet?
So I don't think that we have really been able to or that we've really encountered the volume of patients that we're expecting to see at the height of the spread of this virus in our community. So our numbers haven't been real high, and I think it's because of a couple fortunate things for this region, and unfortunately maybe not to the benefit of other areas. So if you look at what's happening in New York, what they suspect is going to happen in places like Detroit, Chicago, even New Orleans, where they're very dense populations, and the virus, because of the proximity of people, people living in very densely populated areas, the virus is just easier to spread. You're seeing that by the time they started shutting down, businesses and really mandating social distancing and mitigation, the virus already spread quite a bit. So it was only a matter of time until the virus, really set in, got people ill, and then you had, massive amounts of people coming to the hospital. I think we're going to benefit from early intervention, early mitigation, encouraging people to stay at home, the social distancing, all the other measures that have taken place, as difficult as that may be. I think we're not seeing a rapid increase in the number of cases in our region because of those measures. So I believe this is a time to say we're reassured by the steps that we have taken. This is really giving us reason to continue these measures, because what we don't want to see is that rapid spread of cases, and then all of a sudden, our hospitals or our, sites of medical care become overwhelmed, as they have in some other areas. So I really think we're on the right track. People should be encouraged by the data, but not reassured that we're through the worst or that we're out of the woods. I think the next several weeks will be very telling as to what happens in our region, but certainly would encourage people to stay the path. And until we hear from the medical experts that it's okay to start to loosen some of the restrictions on what we're doing, we just need to trust in the process, trust that people are making the right decisions, because the benefit that we're seeing in this region is because of those efforts that have been taken and the compliance and support of our community in that effort, knowing it's not easy.
Can I ask you about the spreading? If you could help us understand this, you may have done this before, but I think we need to be reminded. When you're talking about the spreading, does COVID-19 have an incubation, if I could say it out of my mouth here, incubation period, there we go, or does it just, as soon as you are exposed, then it automatically kicks this off in your system? How does that work? Because if you, or not you specifically, but the medical field you included, say that we could be carriers, but yet we need to be isolated if we've been exposed, how does that work? What kicks it off in the system?
Well, so with this virus, again, it's a new virus, to humans in the world. So it's not old enough for us to have a lot of knowledge about it. So what we do know is that a certain percentage of people, if they get the virus, in other words, if the virus gets in their system, they will become very ill, and many of them will require hospitalization. But we also know that there is a big percentage of people, I've heard up to 80%, and it's very difficult to tell, because you would literally have to test everyone to see if there's detectable virus in their system, but they may not have any symptoms at all. So those so-called asymptomatic carriers, meaning somebody has the virus, they can give you the virus, but they don't feel any ill effects from it whatsoever. They don't even have cough, stuffy nose, fevers. So those are the cases that are difficult to find out. In terms of an incubation period is really the time that you're exposed to an illness and then when the effects start to take place. And the effects are the symptoms that you feel. In a virus, sort of similar to influenza, you would say, chills, fatigue, cough, fever, body aches, perhaps headaches, stuffiness, congestion. And although coronavirus shares a lot of those same characteristics as flu, it tends to also have, other effects that go along with it as well. So the incubation period can range from, a couple days to we don't consider people really To be fully out of the incubation period, at least until about day 10 or 12. So it may be a week or more until people get symptoms. And right about, you know, the 7 to even 12-day period seems to be the time where if people are going to become very ill from the virus, that's about the time that those symptoms really start to show up and declare themselves. So, you know, we'll continue to learn more. The reason, though, for a lot of the mitigation efforts in the shutdown is that it is almost impossible to tell who is carrying the virus and can spread the virus if they're without any symptoms. And that's the reason behind a lot of the decisions that have been made and some of the statements that you hear where some of the health experts will say, well, treat yourself and treat everybody else like they probably have the virus. And that's because it's so difficult to tell if they don't have obvious, you know, outward signs of illness.
One question I know that has been asked many times, especially working in the news industry, is why aren't we reporting, why aren't the numbers being reported of how many people have actually recovered? I know it's important to get out the information of how many are sick because you need to understand how bad is it in the moment. Do we move to the next step? Do we hold back? You know, I believe that information is important. But why is it, Dr. Rottinghouse, that we don't talk, I say we collectively, don't talk enough about the numbers of people who have recovered?
Well, that's a great question. And the honest truth is sometimes in our health systems, we don't have robust enough data to be able to give you those numbers, especially real time. Given that there are many health systems across the region, sometimes it's difficult to track a person if they go to one health system and then, say, another. Or, you know, say they get tested positive in our drive-through that we've had up and running for a few weeks, yet they maybe seek medical care at another facility. So it's not always easy to you know, follow people through, you know, perhaps their illness or, you know, during any potential hospitalization they may have. Or if they simply recover at home. So we do know that we've discharged several people from the hospital that have, you know, gone home, perhaps even after a hospital stay for several days and have recovered. We also know that we've diagnosed COVID and sent people home to recover in isolation. So there are success stories out there, and there are, you know, lots of people who have overcome this virus. And if you just look at the numbers in our county, you know, where we have 90 plus positives recorded, and that we've had, you know, two deaths in Butler Hospital, we do know that a lot of people are getting better. It's just a matter of gathering that data and being able to present it. And, you know, hopefully someday soon we'll be able to look back and present some of that data and say, these are all the people that got better. This is the number of people that were hospitalized. And no matter how sick, you know, some of those patients may have been, you know, as healthcare providers and as a healthcare system, we certainly want to be able to say this many people got better, you know, from coronavirus at this time, while obviously being sensitive to the folks that didn't make it despite whatever efforts, you know, we've put forward to try to, you know, get them back to health.
Let me just ask you another question. I know you're busy and I know you need to get back to work. We were talking off the air before we got started here that the community has stepped up. Is that correct? Community has stepped up. And then a follow-up question to that is, what do you want us to do from here?
Well, so the community has definitely stepped up. I mean, the cards, the support, you know, the letters, you know, phone calls we've received have all been great. I would say that this community in Butler in particular has been incredibly supportive of our efforts here. I think, you know, what we need from the community moving forward, you know, functioning as healthcare providers in this environment has been challenging, but it's also been challenging to be a family member of somebody who's been sick or needed hospitalization or surgery. And the level of understanding that we've had from the community in terms of restricting visitors and allowing only, you know, say FaceTime or interactive or virtual visits, that support from the community has been excellent. And I think the community's understanding that anything we're doing as a system or as a hospital is to keep as many people safe as possible, to reduce the spread of the virus, even in our own building, whether it's between employees or patients to visitors or however that's being done. So any effort that we're doing is to really try to keep as many people safe and limit the spread of disease. And then, the other thing from the community is just continue to hang in there with us, continue to listen to the advice of medical experts, that are coming forward and, encouraging things like mitigation, social distancing, again, realizing that is tough for a community. It's tough as human beings to isolate and to not be together.
Certainly we
feel that as well. So we appreciate the support and just the ongoing efforts of the community to keep in lockstep with our efforts is excellent. And that's all we can ask, but the community has been wonderful so far.
And I will have to say on behalf of the community, not that anyone asked me to be in this position, I'm just going to say it, that I want to thank you for what you all do. I mean, you are right there in the hospital. You're working one-on-one with these individuals, and that has to be scary. And yet you're there doing your job every single day. And so I just want to thank you and thank the rest of your staff for what you do.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. Appreciate the opportunity to share information. And, this is what we signed up for. We signed up for a job that's sometimes tough, that's often very rewarding. But, all of us went into this to try to, make people better and to support our community. So, again, it's cliche. We're all in this together. We're all tied together in this, and we appreciate the support, and we will continue to do the best we possibly can.
Dr. David Rodinghouse, emergency medicine with the Butler Health System, also chief medical officer. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.